now broadcasting the Webcomic Beacon with your hosts, Fess and Tanya.
Yeah, I suppose.
Well, no, I mean, they're horrible soul-sucking creations in many cases, but they pay you, and pay is good.
Pay is always good. And speaking of pay, we are not getting paid to do episode 16 of the Webcomic Beacon. I'm Fess, and with me, as always, actually not really always, is Tanya.
Hi!
And we also have Brett Hanley on the show with us.
Word.
And this week is an open forum discussion. Hopefully we're going to be having a lot more people to call in or have on the show with us. If not, well, screw you guys. We are talking about net neutrality and what it means for webcomics and podcasts and the like. What is net neutrality? Glad I asked. basically, it's the guiding principle that preserves the free and open internet as basically the way it is right now. There are companies, particularly like Comcast and whatnot, that are trying to make a tiered system for people that are quote-unquote more important, that their systems run faster for people to access, and less important people, such as everything free that all basic users use, would be very, very slow unless they pay for a faster connection.
All right.
And basically, with the world of webcomics as it is, podcasts as it is, YouTube, all these things that we use, unless you start paying a fee, they're going to be slow as dial-up.
Yeah. Well, and heaven forbid you actually have dial-up. The timeout issues would be immense. There's no way. We've seen it in Canada where they've already had some abuse of this, where they have blocked other websites, particularly offering services that are competing with the main services. They've slowed the sites down to such a degree where anyone using standard dial-up couldn't access them at all, and even some cable users were getting timeout issues. So it is possible to literally kill competition as well. I mean, this right. has far-reaching... there are far-reaching problems if we don't get this legislation in place.
Brett, comments?
Huh?
Any comments?
Sorry, it's a Dodge.
What?
It's a Dodge. The whole concept of net neutrality is a Dodge. If you look deep into those net neutrality sites, most of them are owned by internet providers. The net neutrality concept isn't going to happen because Comcast isn't going to let Warner shut them out, and Warner's not going to let AT&T shut them out. AT&T is not going to let Verizon shut them out. It's a Dodge. What it is it's a way to make you fight a defensive battle when you should be fighting an aggressive battle to cut down on service charges and service fees that are already ridiculously high. These same people who are making you think, oh no, they're going to make me pay more for stuff that I'm not actually using, are the same people charging you for the same lines that bring your cable modem and your cable TV into the same house on the same line. You're paying $50 to maintain that line. You're paying $50 to maintain that line twice, whereas they've got you worrying about whether or not you're going to be able to read something positive at a regular bitstream.
While I certainly, I've been politically active enough to say that you're probably right in many respects. A lot of this is covered by the big corporations who are supposedly embroiled in battling it. And I do understand that, it's a lot deeper problem than, a lot deeper issue than if you just look at the surface. We have already seen abuses of these kind of powers. I mean, there ought to be, wherever you see any sort of free speech that is not readily controlled, you're going to have these power battles. And I think that's part of what the legislation does. It stops Verizon from shutting down text messages with a pro-choice message. It stops Comcast from slowing Google if Yahoo pays them more money. There are a lot of power battles that can be played out beyond the overall. And I do agree that, I mean, the biggest problem is, you know, how affordable is the information available? And certainly making that cheaper and more accessible, especially for poorer classes of people who are the ones that ought to be upset and paying attention, should be a priority, but I don't think it's the only priority.
Well, what about SaveTheInternet.com? Are you saying that that site is also owned by some other corporation or whatever? I guess I haven't seen what you were talking about, Brett.
I didn't say all of them. I said most of them.
Most of them. Okay.
Yeah. A lot of the bigger ones, I think, isn't SaveTheInternet.com, isn't that, I want to say that it's a particular type of federal corporation. Hold on. Yeah, it's part of the Free Press Action Fund. Which is, I can't think of the numbers that go along with the political action group. But yeah, the SaveTheInternet.com is the site that I'm most associated with, and it's been their campaigns, their congressional campaigns that I've followed. But I do know that they're part of the Free Press Action Network, which is actually how I wound up being connected with them, through other political sites, that, you know, are obviously very interested in free speech. If we don't have free speech, and if we have people toying with free speech, then you lose a lot of that power, especially the grassroots networks, things that we've seen active in the last 10 years. If you cut off their communication ties, you know, that's a huge blow to those smaller groups. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of where I've been following it from, is more from a political level. But obviously, as a self-publisher and a webcomic artist, you know, I count on everything that I have getting out free and with some basic standard of downloadability. So I think, you know, I think it has the potential to affect all of us.
Well, the internet isn't all of free speech.
That is true.
You still have a telephone. You know, unless you're working on Skype, in which case you're screwed.
Yes. And, you know, I've done the phone trees and I've done, you know, but again, being politically active, we've had big corporations try to shut those things down. You know, again, I mentioned the pro-choice message that I believe it was Verizon censored. They decided that Now couldn't send those out. They just blocked them to thousands of people who'd signed up for this newsletter. So part of the difficulty always in any political legislation is getting your foot in the door. And once you get your foot in the door, then you're able to expand those protections to the freedoms we're already supposed to have.
So, Brett, earlier you were saying that we should be fighting more aggressively instead of defensively.
Yeah.
Are you saying that we don't actually have net neutrality now? Or how exactly were you approaching that? Maybe I just don't fully understand the whole situation.
Well, the net isn't by its very nature neutral. There's no such thing as net neutrality. The net's a battleground on all fronts. You know, you spend a lot of time whining. People spend a lot of time whining and pissing and moaning. And actually, the net isn't really that relevant a resource at all. It's like a really big, giant high school cafeteria. But what matters is money. All real social change is economic change, and the companies that you're worried about are just trying to get more milk out of the same cow, and that's pretty much the way it is. It has nothing to do with neutrality. It has very little to do with their politics. The reason Verizon shut down now wasn't because they haven't that Verizon, the company, has anything against pro-choice. It's because Verizon had a lot of customers pissing and moaning because Now was sending out pro-choice messages to people who were signed up on the newsletter, which meant that their daughter was getting text messages saying pro-choice or whatever the heck Verizon
right,
whatever the heck
right. It was about a pro-choice bill that was being put through the states.
Yeah.
Well, people were bitching. Verizon was afraid of losing customers. Verizon shut them down.
See, I have to disagree with you there, though, because they shut it down before anyone got the message. They censored it before it went out. So I'm not, you know, those complaints couldn't have been registered. They were already blocked off. And yeah. they Always are a huge supporter of some opposing groups. So
when a worldwide organization like Now does anything like that, they send out mm-hmm. press releases.
Oh, of course. Yeah, it wasn't secret by any means.
Everybody knew.
But the
it was
people
running.
That they were getting the complaints from, yeah, it was money. You know, of course. I'm not saying that they were doing this from a higher moral standard. I don't believe corporations have one. you know, they were following their cash flow, certainly.
But
I'm a little concerned when I see the cash flow cutting off free speech in little manners. It bothers me.
Well, there's a difference between text messaging and the internet.
Well, certainly.
Text messaging is a direct line from one person to another person. The internet, you're just throwing something up into cyberspace, and whoever wants to go get it can go get it. As internet sites, as managers of internet sites, there's not a whole lot that we could do to stop that.
Right.
But it'll be self-regulating. If 40,000 people a day who go to something positive suddenly start getting 2,400 baud ping rate off of his site, they're going to bitch. Mm-hmm. Because yeah. you know, Randy's not Randy. You know, Randy Mulholland is going to be able to pay whatever god awful price they're going to want.
Right.
But 40,000 people a day, that makes a difference. That's
okay. How do those 40,000 people?
And the
network?
Ones who don't bitch are going to switch to a different service that won't do that to them.
And that is probably true. I will give you that. I will give you that eventually it would be self-regulating. I don't necessarily see the danger in getting legislation passed that prevents it altogether.
So is it just by more the more people that visit a particular site, they're going to be less bogged down by the provider? Or I mean, because it's like, I don't see how you can make like a tiered system. It's like, look at all the, like the webcomic free hosting sites. Mm-hmm. Those I'm fairly certain are not going to be on anyone's top tier list as far as Comcast and whoever's providing internet access. They're probably going to be putting a whole lot of like main corporation websites like MSN and all these other mm-hmm. things at the higher speed, and all these other free sites probably going to be at the way bottom where they probably won't care about it. I mean, maybe I'm misunderstanding how the tiered system is supposedly supposed to work, but
I think what Brett is saying is that if those bottom sites are popular enough, that there will be an outcry from the people that access those sites. And if Comcast or whoever does not respond to that by making those sites accessible, then they'll move their service to someone who will. And most of the time, I would agree with you, but people are lazy and sometimes stupid, and they may not know where to go, and they may not know who to call, and instead, they'll bitch to their next-door neighbor, and they just won't visit the site anymore.
Well, normally I'd agree with you, except for they're aggressive. Well, I mean, let's be honest. This is true with Walmart. Everybody bitches about Walmart destroying jobs and destroying small towns and everybody out of business. But you know what? Everybody shops there.
Everybody but me.
If you tell me you don't shop there, you're lying to me. You shop there. You've been there. You've been there.
I have not been to Walmart in the last, 5 years since I started with the... No. But I'm a very, very politically active person. There is a very small percentage of people.
Too, but I also like to save money.
I go to Walmart every once in a while, but the majority of the time I go to Target.
Well, which is unfortunately not much better, but...
Where else am I going to go? Kmart?
No, I know.
hey, my wife's mother used to work at Kmart.
I'm sorry?
Be nice.
And you're right. Once you're involved in a system, you know, it's the ones where everybody complains. Everyone complains about Walmart. It's a big haboo. We all see it. We all know it. And so it's easier to get this backlash against them. But people do exactly what you say. If they're not going to shop at Walmart, they go to Target. And it's actually not a great deal better. It's just not as publicized as bad. But... part of the reason, to me, that the network neutrality is important is, where did we all get that information? all the action groups I belong to, all the political organizations, all the grassroots things, the bloggers and the very small networks that are getting the local campaigns done and getting people sent to Congress and actually pushing through bills are all done online. We're all in different locations.
Oh,
we're all very
God,
busy.
God, really? They're all online? Of course, the Republican guy that I talked to while I was at the... See, it's not all online.
No. Our organization is.
Tiny little groups that are national. The way that grassroots works is you work at home and you find out the people at home. The reason that grassroots movements that start on the internet fail on the whole is because there aren't that many people.
I agree with you.
Over an internet pool of 24 million, 250 million, or 150 million. 150 million states.
I absolutely agree with you. What I mean is that this is how we stay connected. That we've all met in person, and that's where we have our action groups, and that's where we do the actual work.
But yeah.
The organization is all online. Does that make sense?
Yeah, but I don't see why you can't do it, why it would be impossible for you to do the same thing through mass emails to your organization.
We could. It takes more work.
And who's to say email systems won't be affected by a tiered internet? Unless these email places, whoever they are, pay Comcast or whoever extra amounts of money to be able to not have their email slowed, we could see basically snail mail timings for emails to be sent out and received.
Certainly, with the free email services like Yahoo and Google,
that doesn't give you like six email accounts for free with your IP.
I don't know anybody who uses their IP email.
I don't either.
Everyone uses
really why?
Everyone I knew, you know, uses like web-based email, like Yahoo, Gmail, Hotmail.
I use
why?
Gmail and the one from my own site.
Why? Because
I use my IP.
You change your server. You change your internet service provider all the time. I change it whenever.
No,
I change mine whenever possible to someone who's cheaper. I know when I moved.
Cheaper, faster, better.
I moved from St. Cloud to Minneapolis. I couldn't use the same provider anymore because they didn't exist down here. And in St. Cloud, there's three different types of providers that provide the internet. And what we do, we go to whoever gives us the best price, the best deal. And if you move, especially you live in an apartment, you're going to be changing addresses. You're going to change who's going to be paying for what to get the cheapest rate, the best cost.
See, that's the thing is you're a kid.
I'm 27 years old.
Same house for 20 years.
Okay, I haven't been in the same house. I'm hitting the mic now. I haven't been in the same house for that long. I'm 35.
But tons of people use web-based email. Like I said, I guess, Brett, you're the first person in a long time that I've known that uses an IP email address exclusively.
Yeah. Other than businesses.
Yeah, other than businesses, but they already have access to their own servers. And
oh, exclusively. Well, I don't just use my. I've got a couple of other emails that I use for people that I don't want to bother me.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's the thing
that's the
Yahoo mail account for anybody that I don't want them to know who I really am.
But the thing with provider email accounts, there's always a possibility that you won't be with this provider forever, or something may happen to the provider or their system. And it's like, if they don't exist anymore, well, your email is screwed. You can't use it anymore because they don't exist or you don't use them anymore. Web-based email is like the only sure way that, you know, you'll be able to get out there somehow and be able to be contacted again.
Well, and again, if you look at the people with the most free time, the people who are most politically active, the people who are getting out the kind of content that we're talking about, you know, from something positive to our sites, you're looking at people who are younger and still in that transitory age. It would be very easy to cripple an entire demographic by shutting down by funneling the internet so that it only works for people with the most money. It would be very easy to shut those people down. My concern is that's what this is about. It's about silence. It's not about, certainly it's about cash. But if you can get cash and silence at the same time, that's like a bargain deal. That's what every big company wants. Not this kind of silence, because that's awkward and needs to be edited out later.
Sorry, I'm laughing.
Well, we can take a quick break right here.
Okay.
All right.
Cool, because
All right, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll talk some more. All right. The Webcomic Beacon is proud to be an affiliate of The Geek Media. TheGeekMedia.com has a number of geek-related websites, podcasts, and blogs for you to check out. Check out TheGeekMedia.com.
Webcomic Beacon is hosted by Zephyr.net. Free hosting for free thinkers.
And we're back. Brett, early in the first half of the show, you were talking about that we should be taking a more an aggressive stance. We didn't really touch on this. What do you think would be an aggressive stance on what we're talking about?
Well, an aggressive stance would be, as I said, making sure that the cost of having the cost of access is reduced and not increased.
And what would be the best way for basically the every person to do that?
But for the average person to do it?
Like
to shop around and to buy those package deals where you're not actually paying $50 twice for the same lines. But those package deals only last for 6 months, and they're tied to a 2-year contract, so you're kind of screwed on that.
There's not really a whole lot of option. Go ahead.
The best way, and yeah, I know Tanya's going to hate this, but the best way is to tear apart those businesses, get back to the local monopolies, and put some power back into your state and local public utilities corporation.
You know what? I don't hate that. I actually think it's a great idea.
Deregulation has done more to destroy communications and power transmission than anything. I was all about private, you know, controlled monopolies. Local monopolies were fantastic because, you know what? I knew who I had to call. I didn't have to call 5 different people to make sure that, you know, it wasn't a problem at the power plant or a power problem with the person who owned the transmission lines or the person who owns the transmission lines pays to fix the drop from the transmission lines to my actual house.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just one company. And if they did bad, the Public Utilities Commission jumped all over them. And I had to ask the Public Utilities Commission for permission to raise prices.
Do you think we're beyond a point where that's possible? How do you break apart? I mean, I understand what you're saying with deregulation. How do we go about that now? Now that they've become
these monsters? Well, AT&T already violated the laws of their break apart.
Yes.
AT&T is almost all the way back together again. The only people left, I think, that were originally AT&T that aren't currently in the AT&T that's owned by Southwestern Bell.
Mm-hmm.
Conglomerate are, I think Nortel and Southern Bell are the only Bells left that haven't been absorbed back into the conglomerate.
Well, this is the thing. Back in St. Cloud, there was a company that had always done everyone's internet. It was like Quest or something, or even before Quest, there was something else. It was a local. And then there was another one that was little. It was semi-regional, I think. And then, like, you know, Comcast is like, you know, national. And it's just to a point. It's like it's like this seems to be like this big goal to squash all like the little guys and just spread your national things. So you can cover like the entire broadcast area. And I can see that from a business point. You always want to expand or whatever, but I never saw any problem with the smaller local people. I didn't see any benefit to why this happened, to why there's why Comcast is taking over the local, and is like, but I liked my other one better. And the legislation never did anything. They just allowed it to happen. And they just didn't want to. It's like the reason that they allowed their other company to take over is that they didn't want to deal with all the different multiple connections. Like, it sounds like such a piss-ass excuse.
What's a cash excuse? I mean,
well,
maintaining transmission lines is very expensive, especially for a smaller company.
Right.
I mean, it depends on how small the local area was. I mean, if you're talking about a small local area in a city, that's one thing. But if you're talking about rural Minnesota, where a company with maybe 10,000 customers is maintaining something like 40,000 miles of transmission line, you know, it's like, how do they make any money to begin with?
Yeah, it's crippling.
Well, it was a tri-county area thing, so it was several cities. But
was it several cities or several towns?
Well, St. Cloud, Wade Park, Sauk Rapids, and
so you're talking about maybe 100,000 people?
I think so. I don't know how
over
I could look
an area
that up.
Maybe 20,000 acres.
Sort of population. I don't even know how to look this up. Census Bureau.
Oh, you just want to listen to the whole thing?
No, I'm trying to figure out how I can find out what this information was. I mean, yeah, but transmission cost is one thing, and I don't know, maybe do you think people would be willing to pay more to get back to?
It's cheap. It's maintaining the lines for transmission that's expensive.
Ah.
Because, you know, copper has a cost, and all those lines are copper.
Yeah.
I mean, look out your back. Well, if I look out my back window, I see 4 heavy lines, 1 power line for my house, 2 cable lines. And then if I could see through the ground, I could see the phone line. But, you know, that's where the cost is, and that's where they're already milking the cow twice is... Whether you have DSL or cable, you're paying for the same line two times.
Right.
I suppose. I never really thought about that. I don't know. I haven't really had purchased TV in like forever. I've just gotten the internet because I can't afford the TV. It's like we already pay what, $50 right now for high speed internet right now, and that's like, that's way more than I paid back in St. Cloud for 3 megabit service, and I think this is like 6 or whatever, but I don't really see the difference between 6 or 3 right now. And I'm paying like at least $20 more than I did back in St. Cloud, and then TV's like another like 20, 30, 40 bucks on top of that, depending on if you want basic or extended. And it's like,
right.
I can download all I want off of the internet. If I want to see a TV show, I will go and I'll BitTorrent the show. Because I don't feel like paying for any of that anymore. You know, it's ridiculous. I shouldn't have to have, you know, $80 to $100 payment for something that comes through this little line.
Yeah. So if we can't break down these huge conglomerations into smaller companies, because those companies they're not cost effective at this point, how do we get around this? How do we get around this monstrous system of these huge corporations that, you know, like you said, are openly
monopolies. You say, okay, you can have your monopoly, but you have to follow our rules, and these are our rules. You have to ask the PUC for permission to raise prices. You can only charge this. You can only charge for the use of the lines once. Mm-hmm. And that's the way to do it, is if you cannot force the big companies into break up, which
probably
really is kind of bad to break up the large companies, because honestly, things like communication and power really should be controlled by a single provider.
That makes it more cost effective.
If you can't break them down, you let them have their way, let them have their monopoly, but force them to follow certain rules. Right now they're having it both ways. They didn't want to be monopolies anymore because they were having to follow rules. So they got to break apart. Now they're becoming monopolies, but they're not following the rules anymore.
Right. So we're back to grassroots networking. I mean, how do you get this? How do you get this legislation passed? How do you convince an entire nation who's been taught since Rockefeller that monopolies are bad, that that's no longer a bad idea? That we go ahead, we go with the monopolies, but we change the rules.
Well, they haven't been taught since Rockefeller that monopolies are bad. They've really only been taught since about, oh, I guess Carter, that monopolies are horribly bad. The Bell breakup didn't happen until 1982, and then the local monopolies on power didn't really start breaking down until the 90s.
I remember when I was in school, they hit the Rockefeller thing very, very hard. I mean, in grade school, they use that as the basis as why monopolies are horrible. I mean, we're taught young now. They start you in third grade telling you that monopolies are bad. So how do you convince people that's not true?
Well, they taught us that certain kinds of monopolies were bad. And really, the Standard Oil monopoly got broken up in the 40s? Either the 40s or the 50s. So, yeah.
Are you thinking of an oligopoly?
We don't know who you're talking to.
Alright, never mind. I thought there was like another word for it. For a monopoly, but it's controlled.
No, I'm talking about a controlled monopoly. An oligopoly is a very nice scientific word for what used to be called a industrial trust. Like Standard Oil sold oil to blah, blah, blah. My brain stops sometimes. Well, I'm trying to think of a robber baron example. Standard Oil sold oil to the Morgans, who owned all the trains, who used their trains to move all the steel for U.S. to move all the iron and steel for U.S. Steel, who built the rails for the trains and built the rigs for the oil rigs, and they had this nice everybody's all in bed together situation. That's an oligopoly.
Okay.
Is a trust is when people is when disparate companies work together to do price fixing, and it's just as illegal as having a monopoly is.
Yes.
I don't know, Tanya, to answer your question, I don't know how you convince people who think that all monopolies are bad that controlling a monopoly is better than having a bunch of, you know. The only thing I could say is, would you rather have an elephant tied to a chain or have 100,000 little fire ants crawling all over your pants?
Now, personally, I'm going to go with the elephant in the chain. Now, having been a campaign manager, convince 100,000 people of that might be a little difficult because, you know, you're always going to have someone who is able to describe the elephant as big and monstrous and mean and awful and easy to squish you. Whereas the ants are a nuisance, and you can just brush them off. It's fine.
Well, see, it's because you're thinking too widely.
Well,
grassroots movements succeed not when they're national, but when they're a series of local movements.
But your opposition will always give you the national example. Always. Because that's how they squash you. I won't say always, because it's been my experience that you can get people fired up and you can give them this idea and you can start these local groups and start to pull together and start to, you know, get these things done. And what comes back at you is a national example. They tell you how your tiny step is leading all of America down the road of destruction. And it's very easy to kill those kind of things if they do have a national example. It sounds scary.
I was going to say something.
Okay.
Okay.
You should do so.
I think power, like electricity power, is still done at a regional level because it only makes sense that way. because you can't really compete with companies for any particular area. No, we're going to use this guy's electricity, not your electricity. And then you're just kind of like wasting the lines, because then you'd have to feed like two different types of lines through the two different types of power companies. You know, right. having more than one company for power does not make any sense whatsoever, because you're wasting resources essentially. As far as the internet, it's a bunch of computers connected to other computers, a big worldwide web of electrical connections. How you make a tiered system is, I can't even picture how you do that without running a bunch of subroutine programs, always picking out, tracking where your customers are going, and then forcing, like putting a little resistor in for the sites that, I can't even picture how it would even work properly without entirely reconstructing the internet as we know it. It doesn't make any logical sense to make a tiered system. It sounds like it's all going to be entirely slower, because it sounds like Comcast or whatever are going to have like spyware programs on our computers and force us to have them.
What they have done is they make everything run slow and then amp certain sites. That's all it's come down to.
There's no point to do that. I can't think of any logical reason why not to do that. I mean,
well, because they get money. I mean, money's good. they slow everything down, and then the people who pay them get sped up.
So it's entirely on the connect. So it's like Comcast is doing it. Comcast can't actually go into, say, Drunk Duck and affect their thing. It's only about the Comcast users that try to visit Drunk Duck, and it turns out slow. And then if they go to like MSN.com, it's going to be sped up for them. So it's entirely on their end.
I don't know how the tubes work, Fess. I really don't. We could. I mean,
server IDs.
Server IDs.
Huh?
Server IDs. Every server has an identification. If Drunk Duck doesn't pony up the money, then the Comcast servers, using the Comcast as an example, slow it down or take their time pinging the server. And they ping the Microsoft network server a lot more times and a lot faster. But it all comes down to the identification of the server. The servers identify themselves all the time.
Yeah, that makes sense. Well, you say a monopoly would be good as long as it's regulated.
Yes.
But it's,
regulated monopoly would be better.
And I don't entirely disagree with
you. You can't have multiple power companies. In Houston, we have six. Basically, under the deregulation laws, Reliant Energy, which owns all of the transmission lines, and AT&T, which owns all of the phone transmission lines, are required to provide the transmission. I'm sorry, CenterPoint, who owns the transmission lines for the electricity, but they're required to provide the transmission lines for a very reduced rate to whoever wants them.
But don't you need more than one power line connected to each house in order to do that? Or is it just the amount of power that they feed into the network? Because it's like a big... electricity works like it's on a big web. It's like you have a power station, you have all these electrical lines running to people's houses and businesses, and they only can estimate how much each individual house uses without short of going and checking the meter at the place. Otherwise, they're typically estimated. It's like dumping a bunch of hot water into one end of the bathtub. It'll eventually get its way all the way to the end. That's why some people, if the connection is weak or they're much farther away from the centralized power plant, they're going to have a lot slower or weaker connection. You won't be able to turn as much stuff on for that farthest house. I guess I can't see if I'm correct in that assumption anyway.
Okay, electricity doesn't work that way, first of all.
Okay.
You always have the same voltage throughout the entire line.
But that's not how SimCity worked. You have this house way, way over there. They don't get enough electricity.
Yeah, it doesn't work by SimCity.
Okay. All right.
Woo!
if that were true, we would have some severe technological problems in you know, outstretched regions and in farmlands and things like that.
Los Angeles.
All of Los Angeles.
I guess I figured they had more power supply.
Their power from out-of-state sources.
Yeah.
They get a lot of power from Hoover Dam.
Yeah.
And from Grant Gulley Dam up in Washington.
Yeah. It's crazy.
Yeah. It doesn't quite... Yeah.
Well, I think that if all the big internet companies end up... It's... Because... I don't know. They have to be able to. They have to be regulated in some sort of way. Because it's like you see all these prices going up, and it's like I know back in St. Cloud when it was switching over to a bigger company, it's like, why do you have to charge more? It didn't cost us that much more before, but everyone was complaining, but nobody actually did anything about it, so it just kind of happened. And then everyone's starting to bitch a whole lot more after it happened, and well, you didn't do anything.
The standard excuse that we got was urban sprawl, that as new developments and, you know, farmland was being taken up by houses, they had to lay more line, and that line's expensive, and so we have to raise prices. And everybody went, oh, okay. And that was kind of the end of it. I hadn't, since the last rate hike, it wasn't even the last one, it was a couple rate hikes ago, I haven't heard any complaints at all.
I don't know. I can see once if this tiered system starts working, I can see myself calling and complaining to the people every single day for me not being able to access the sites that I actually need to look at or want to look at, I guess.
And that would be good.
And a lot
that's
of people,
what we hope people would do.
Well, that's only part of what you need to do.
No.
It doesn't really help for you to call up every single day and piss and moan at the poor single mom who sits there on the phone listening to people piss and moan about their internet service, because you know what? That's all she does is sit there and lodge complaints, and they just see them and they count the numbers, and it's like, oh, 500 people complaining about internet, but nobody dropped the service, so screw them.
Right.
What you have to do is instead of complaining to, if you're not willing to cut your service, what you have to do is get it regulated by talking to your congressman, talk to your state representative, talk to your mayor, talk to your city councilman, talk to your county commissioner, because believe it or not, county commissions actually have a lot of power as far as providing utilities go, and get them regulated. If the only company in the greater Minneapolis area is Comcast, then that constitutes a local monopoly, and I don't see why it should be so difficult for somebody to convince Minneapolis City Council that they are a local monopoly and force Comcast to at least sign contracts regulating Comcast's ability to raise prices and be jackasses.
Oh, geez.
And actually, if you go to congress.org, you can get contract information for everything from state officials to you know, your very local local officials like the county commissioners. Because I've noticed in talking to people, they don't realize that, you know, you can't call them. Certainly you get an assistant, but you do get logged. There is a little trick that I learned.
Mm-hmm.
If you call the office and you get the assistant, ask for their name. Then when you write the letter, you put attention of, put the assistant's name on it, that letter's more likely to be read. Because they assume that you are in the know. So.
it always helps a lot more to send a letter as well. I mean, in addition to doing a phone call. Because, you know, everyone should have heard the kind of rule of thumb. Every one letter equals, I don't know, what is it, five different people at least thinking that? I don't know.
Yeah.
There's like some sort of like politician, you know, rule of thumb as far as when you receive a letter, how many more people that it means that are also thinking that.
Right. Letters carry more weight because it's actually, well, it's action.
Yeah, it's more more effort as well shown. Yeah. So. Mm-hmm.
And if there's one person of action, there's, yeah, at least 5 to 10 people bitching about it behind the scenes. So, and it's actually very easy to start letter writing campaigns too. I've done it before where you get a bunch of people together, you all sit down, you talk about what you want to say. You know, you sit down, write the letters together. It's not as, it doesn't feel as futile And, you know, it's easier to get participation if it's not something, oh, okay, I'll do it when I get home.
Well, this discussion went a lot better than I thought it would. I thought we might have just kind of ended after 10 minutes and moved on to some other discussion, but this was a very healthy discussion. And we are at the end of our time right now, so...
Oh, darn.
Yeah, so I'll put a bunch of links into the show notes, as particularly for... what was that one? Government.com or something? I don't know what you said.
Congress.org.
Congress.org. And do either one of you have any closing thoughts?
Well, you can also go to houseofrepresentatives.gov and senate.gov.
Well, excellent. This is the most informative show we've had yet.
I liked having you on, Brett.
Yes, thanks for coming on with us.
Enjoyed being on. It was fun.
All right, we're going to take one more break, and when we come back, we're going to finish off the show with all the other useless stuff that we have to talk about. So, catch you on the other side.
Would you like to get involved with the Beacon? Just send to webcomicbeacon@gmail.com.
And we're back for the last third of the show. This week we're doing a Ustream, a broadcast of the recording of the show, because it was an open forum segment. And we hope to do this again in the future for when we have these open forums. We highly encourage people to get on Skype and try to call into the show if they have something to talk about, or even just record yourself and send us an audio a file to our email account so we can, play your audio like a call-in. Really encourage listener feedback. And right now, the only person who's showing some real enthusiasm is K-Dog, who's in our chat room, our Ustream chat room right now. And so a special thanks to K-Dog of... Shoot, what's his webcomic? Yes, it's Angry D Monkey. And I'm
awesome.
Looking for the URL. Yep, it's angrydmonkey.com. All right, so check that out. I also got a quick little mention that when we were talking about webcomic podcasts last week, we mentioned Digital Strips, which hasn't really seemed to be doing any podcasts anymore. I just got a note from Bridget. I think it was Bridget saying that digital strips are back. So we'll put a link in the show notes for that. And they're recording, they're reviewing... what is it? Pictures for Boring Children? What was it?
Pictures for Sad Children.
Yeah, Pictures for Sad Children.
And we'll take on the vexing question of whether lolcats are a webcomic. Whether or not lolcats can be considered a webcomic. Which goes right back to your single panel. And
If it's single panel, no.
They're single panels, but they're in a series.
They're not really a series.
Well, no, because they're all contributed by different people. But you know what? That's their argument. They can talk about their podcast.
They can do that if they want. let's see here. I had some notes. Oh, yes. Milestones. We have one milestone this week to talk about. Let's see. Well, there was another milestone. We got like a month ago, a milestone for this one comic, which I'm not going to say until they hit the milestone, because they are update weekly, and they told me like 5 weeks ago, so they're at they got two more left before I'm going to announce them, so you know who you are. Anyway, let's see here. The webcomic is Mr. Oblivious, a family and kid friendly webcomic that had reached a milestone not too long ago, over 100 cartoons online.
Congratulations.
All I have to say is, like, look at the website and not entirely sure what I'm looking at. So it might take some while to poke through, but it looks weird. So anyway, that's the milestone for this week, Mr. Oblivious at MrOblivious.com.
Congratulations on your milestones.
And if anybody else knows of any milestones, 1 year, second year, etc., 100 comics, 200, etc. comics, let us know, and we will announce you on the show. Oh, yes, I should mention again, stripfight.org, where you're given a weekly theme, and you are to draw a competing comic strip of that theme. The theme for this week is round 149, which is Dungeons and Dragons / Gary Gygax tribute.
Yeah.
There are 5 different people competing in that right now. Next week's theme is Easter egg, and you have until March 24th to get that in. So head over to stripfight.org and make a contribution. Next week, we are going to be having part 3. Wait, do you want to say it?
I could. Next week we're having part 3 of our webcomic brainstorm session, where we are moving on to scene creation, are we not?
I don't know. I don't think we're ever going to be done trying to figure out the character. Seems like that. Long creation process. Certainly something.
I think there's just a lot of cooks.
Too many cooks in the kitchen, perhaps. And then after that, we got a few things in the works that we want to work on. One might be guest art in comics, which is semi-pre-recorded, but I may hold that until later. We also want to get together and do a Jenny Everywhere discussion with some of as many as the old Jenny Everywhere artists that I can get in contact with, a bunch of the people that used to work on all of the original Jenny Everywhere stuff, which you can find at theshifterarchive.com, as well as we want to talk about webcomic reviewing coming up. Speaking of which, we really need a new webcomic reviewer for the Webcomic Beacon.
Please.
We are going to try to find some people to do some guest reviews, people that already have webcomic review sites, if they want to do an audio guest review. We are more welcome to that. But also, if there's somebody out there listening that thinks that they can do a decent job of reviewing a comic, and when we review comics, these are for comics that are, I want to say, well over 100 strips, since all of our impressions that Aaron does are under 100, just because there's a little bit more dedication to having a plus 100 comic strip, especially something that's been going on for a while. And I'm looking for a good about 5 minutes of stuff to talk about for when you do a webcomic review, you know, go into its writing, go into its art. And, you know, I've been a little bit reluctant in the past just to get any other person just to do a review. But if you feel you're confident enough that you can do a really good, solid webcomic review that touches on a lot of different points, and hey, give us a try. In fact, I want to open it up for anybody to be able to just send in their own webcomic review as a trial. Yeah. And I'll go ahead and I'll play all of them on the air, unless there's some that are highly questionable.
And this comic sucks.
Yeah. And go ahead, send those in. And if you can't, if you don't know how to record yourself or you have trouble sending large attachments, get a hold of me. Get a hold of us on the Webcomic Beacon, webcomicbeacon@gmail.com or festworks@gmail.com, and I will set up a time in which we can even get together on Skype and we can record your review that way. That's perfectly viable. Anyway, we really got to wrap this show up. We got to get out of here. Anyway, you've been listening to the Webcomic Beacon, episode 16, where we've been talking about net neutrality, as well as we've had Brett Haley on the show. Thanks again for coming along. Again,
it was awesome.
Oh, man. I do not know how to say goodbye.
You've been listening to the Webcomic Beacon. Thank you so much.
See you next week.
You're supposed to say this is Fest, then I say this is Tanya, then we hang up.
Now it's awkward again. This has been Fest.
This is Tanya.
That's all for the Beacon. Be sure to tune in next week.
Are you this entertaining 24 hours a day?
Yes!
That was my wife.
That was brilliant. I love her now, too.